Hi, everyone. Welcome to Domain Sherpa. Today is an episode of Down the Rabbit Hole with Yoni, Drew, and me. On this show, we discuss El Salvador becoming the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. We also break down some of the recent FUD in the crypto space and talk about FTX, Solana versus Cardano, and even a little bit about decentralized domains. All of this is coming up right now on Down the Rabbit Hole here on Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. So let's go. It don't matter what you say, there ain't no way that you messing with my team today. It don't matter what you do, I will. What's up, Sherpa Network? Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jonathan Tenenbaum, a.k.a. JT, a.k.a. J-On, and I am the host and producer of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Today's show is Down the Rabbit Hole, where, as we say on Domain Sherpa, all roads lead to domains. And in the reverse, our work in domains has us venturing all the time into different areas and topics, some familiar to us, crypto, NFTs, digital assets, but plenty of others that aren't so familiar, hence the jump down the rabbit hole. So, and as I always say, if nothing else, it just gives us a chance to talk about some things that we want to talk about. And hopefully the audience and y'all find it interesting. And as always, just hit us up with a comment if you want us to dive into something, more thoroughly, or if you have something you want us to kind of talk about, or you have some interesting feedback on something we've been talking about, just get at us and it's all good. So with that, let me go ahead and introduce my co-hosts as always. Over here to my right, I got my man, the one and only Andrew Rosner, a.k.a. the Dirk Diggler of Domain Names. And, the one and only, you know what I'm saying? And so y'all know Drew. At this point, if I got to introduce you, man, I'm just going to say, look, go back into the library and watch some episodes, get familiar. Number one domain broker in the world, you know, man of leisure and, all that good stuff. That's what's up. And down below, we've got my man, Yoni Belousov, a.k.a. Young Money, a.k.a. Blue Steel. Throw the picture up on him. Boom. You know. Oh, by the way, for those of you who are only listening and not watching the videos, just so you know, we've upped our production game. So, like, as we're going through and we introduce everybody with their AKAs, we're throwing the pictures up that, you know, like over Yoni, we throw that, Ben Stiller, Zoolander, Blue Steel, and all that good stuff. And then when we're doing the domain game on Domain Sherpa Review, we're keeping score on a scoreboard and we do some other cool stuff. The commercials are pretty neat. We got some new ads and visuals and all that kind of stuff. So if you have a chance to watch the video. You also get to see my dope ass background. You know what I mean? Yoni's also got a little art himself. He's got that Mickey Mouse on crack over there above the couch. And so make sure you don't miss that, you know, that's going to be an NFT. So with that, man, like I said, you know, this is just an opportunity for us to get on here and talk about things that we're otherwise talking about that, we talk about with our other peoples and, feedback's been really, really positive. So just keep it coming. Let us know what's good. And, appreciate you taking the time to join us. So with that, co-host Drew, Yoni, thank you for being here, guys. What's happening?
Whew, a little bit of, you know, a little pain,
a little tea
little
pain.
Summer weather coming out, all speaking sorts of stuff.
By the way, speaking of pain, I mean, I know we're talking about just some of what's happening in the crypto market. We're going to get into that. But we were talking about music earlier and, Drew put me on to, I'm not a big blues, like I enjoy blues, but I'm not like a blues fan. Swan Blues and all that other good stuff. But
listen, you can't even say you're a music fan if you don't understand how to enjoy some blues.
No. It's and like, I like it.
It's just
so he put me on to Taj Mahal. Yoni, are you familiar with Taj Mahal, the blues dude?
Yeah. No.
First of all, it is dope. Like
you need to twerk your robot, man, if he's not putting you on on Taj Mahal.
Does the bot not enjoy music?
Yeah.
The bot is not this sophisticated, I guess. It needs to leave the auction scene a little bit, I think.
So we were
Ruski, you need to get out once in a while.
Yeah,
it's true, yeah.
Ruski's gonna become like Skynet though. You're gonna get him out of the house, like you're gonna put him into an actual robot, like a Boston Dynamic robot. He's gonna become self-aware. He's gonna be like,
yeah, it's gonna get weird once he gets a buddy.
Exactly. It's gonna get weird. Anyway, Taj Mahal is super, super dope. You know, because we went down, it was our own little rabbit hole this morning just talking about music and you know, and honestly, I'd never heard him before. And, you know, all those listening to some of the music, some of the tunes are definitely familiar. I think I've heard some of the stuff sampled in some hip hop tracks and things like that. But what was the joint, the trunk joint that is like the one that you initially put me onto? And then
leaving trunk alone.
Leaving trunk alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is like,
if you need a place to start, you go to Taj Mahal. You start with Giant Step is the best album, in my opinion. And you can work your way up from there. But leaving trunk alone is like, that's one of my, you know, if I had to create like a life, you know, life playlist, that would be on the list.
Yeah.
If I had like, you know, if I had to pick like 20 songs and, you know, represent my life, leaving trunk alone, Taj Mahal, that's on that list.
All right. Yeah. Well, super, super dope. So just wanted to throw that out there because again, I was like, you know, I felt almost like embarrassed that I didn't, that I'd never heard dude before. And
as you should be.
you're supposed to be like, nah, it's cool, man. It's a little obscure.
No, that ain't cool. Yeah, that ain't cool at all. It's one of the legends.
It is super dope though. So I just want to put it out there in the universe, since like, you know, you put me onto it. I want to, anybody who's not aware needs to go check it out. But that's all good. All right. So now as we pivot away from music and pop culture and so yeah, crypto, man. I mean, it's, you know, it's been 2 weeks, right? So that's like, you know, it's like dog years out here. So 2 weeks is like 2 years with all this.
I think craziness. It's Doge years.
Doge years. It's Doge years. And so we had the Bitcoin conference that went down in Miami, which we didn't attend. I should have drove down there, man. But it like sold out like super fast. And, you know, and it looks like it was a scene. There was definitely a lot of like, you know, like a lot of cool, wild stuff happening. And, you know, so first of all, you think that, I mean, you know, is there a bit of a hangover post conference, you know, where it was like, because earlier this week, well, you know, so by the time this show is going to air probably tomorrow or by the weekend. So Monday we had a dip, you know, we saw like Bitcoin trading really low volume, looked like it was going to, you know, it was either going to be going up or it was going to be going down. And it looks like it picked down. And then, you know, and almost everything kind of bottomed out, but everything dropped a decent amount. And so what do you guys, you know, so what do you think? Any ideas of what led to that? Did it have anything to do with like just what was going on in the space with the big, big dogs? Or was it just, you know, is it just kind of what it is correcting? What do you guys think is going on with that?
Well, I don't really look too much, too much into this. The short-term trends, because to me it's just kind of, I guess, noise. It's just on the long term, that's when it evens out, and then you can kind of see a trajectory.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, there's just, you know, there's always this FUD that surrounds Bitcoin, you know, the fear, uncertainty, doubt, and there's kind of like the constant recycled stories of, oh, well, Bitcoin sounds like it got hacked and it wasn't. Sounds like, you know, like, again, I guess a continuation of that FUD of that has to do with energy usage. And then, you know, just, I mean,
government bans. And
yeah, government bans. The China one, also with the mining bans. Then at the end of the day, it sounds like all of that is like BS. And the end result is that now Bitcoin is an official currency in El Salvador. So
Well, let's talk about it. All right, yeah, that's a great segue, man. So
but I just want to point out that effectively, like, it seems like everything that's bad, I mean if you look in these cycles, it's just a repetitive piece. I mean, everything that's bad happens to be not really relevant, and then, you know, something good pops up and it just carries it to the next level.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. The El Salvador thing, I think, pretty incredible. Right. And, you know, that's one of the things for me that, you know, I always felt like just, you know, big macro kind of level, like thought around Bitcoin and just, you know, adoption and use is that, you know, I always felt like anywhere that you've got these countries, I mean, in the US, right, we're printing money like it's going out of style. And you can even, you know, argue that, you know, that's creating inflation. You know, we're going to see maybe hyperinflation and, you know, whole stagflation, whatever, a whole lot of inflation up in this bitch, you know what I'm saying? And you know, and we're the most, you know, stable country in the world, right, to some degree, right? You know, so looked at all that kind of shit, shining house on the hill. But, you know, so, and we're kind of fucked up, right? So you've got countries that are really fucked up that, you know, their currency is a mess, right? They're sitting,
well, their economy and also is a mess. As far as I understand,
but Salvador's U.S. dollar, so they
in a way that crisis potentially puts them in an even worse position, because then
the U.S. devalues it,
and then hence their own currency gets devalued because they use the U.S. dollar, but they don't get to gain the benefit of devaluing it themselves. So it's this created extra revenue for them that they, or extra cash out of nowhere that they can use for, you know, instead of taxes or to fund whatever projects. They effectively get the disadvantage of being devalued without the advantage of being the one devaluing it. So
yeah, they don't get the policy benefits, for them, right?
It's an excellent. First of all, I mean, just as far as
it's no different. It's no different than being a shareholder in a company, and the company decides to issue new shares, and you as a shareholder get diluted. The company benefits because it's actually getting cash in for the new share issuance. But you as a shareholder, you don't benefit from new shares. Say, oh, wow, I've got new friends. They're all shareholders now. No, what you've got is a bunch of new shares that dilute the value of your shares. But
no new
the
friends.
Thing, there's, I have a nuanced and developing opinion about this whole thing, though. So, including myself, I think that the consensus narrative worldwide from a macro perspective is, we are headed towards an inflationary environment. And I've generally was full on 100% agreed with that narrative. I no longer agree with that narrative. And I actually think that we will not see any inflation whatsoever. I think that that is a crock, and that actually the inflation narrative was actually started by the Fed in order to take advantage. Well, basically, you have these temporary inflationary constraints, which, like, you know, supply chain bottlenecks and factory manufacturing shutting down, insufficient chips to manufacture cars, insufficient capacity to process lumber, you know, all sorts of things that are temporary bottlenecks that are causing supply constraints, that are causing short-term serious inflationary movements in the cost of commodities in particular, but also, you know, manufactured goods like cars and or houses. And but I don't really see where the demand side will come from to sustain that, because ultimately those supply constraints will fall off. Supply will, revert back to normal. And I think that if anything, demand is less than it was pre-COVID in the real economy, and not greater. And in addition to that, I think that COVID has released a round of innovation that will, for the next decade or more, create incredible new capacity, new efficiencies, new productivity, and that technological innovation will outstrip the monetary growth, the monetary base growth. And so I think in the United States, very specifically, and probably Europe, but very specifically in the United States, we will see zero inflation. And I think that if anything, we actually have a disinflationary environment, and I think that will be sustained. I don't see that changing. From because of demographics, because of innovation, because of a variety of different things. And so I think that this narrative is just like, okay, we're going to take advantage of these short-term constraints that are causing inflation that people are able to perceive. Perceived inflation is inflation. And so if people perceive inflation enough, they're willing to accept interest rate hikes that would otherwise be absolutely devastating and unacceptable to the markets. But if people, the one thing people hate the most is inflation, because it literally just destroys people. I mean, unless you're an asset holder, you get wiped out in an inflationary environment. Never mind, you know, hyperinflation. But so I think that, you know, central banks look at the world and they say, all right, we have two options. Either we are able to put the brakes on and start the process of raising interest rates to a healthy, not normal nominative level, or we continue down the path that has no end. where we continue to have to maintain a zero interest rate environment. Potentially, we even see negative interest rates. And, you know, we see unprecedented, even in today's world, amounts of continued stimulus leading up to some sort of UBI or whatever. I believe that was the world we were going towards. I no longer believe that is the world we're going towards. It really requires that the Fed and Congress consist of a series of complete sociopaths for us to actually pursue that path. And so I'm not ruling it out.
I was going to say, that's a pretty big leap, man. That's a big assumption, you know, saying, nah, they're good. They're all good.
Well, they're not all good. That's for damn sure. But I just don't think that we would have a conceded decision. This is the path we're going to take.
Yeah.
And so I think that actually this inflation narrative is false. I don't think we're going to see inflation. I think that we may even see the dollar actually appreciate. Consensus right now is we're going to have significant inflation, dollars going down. You know, these are the main consensus things. Interest rates are not going up. These are like the three most important points. And I think that they are now consensus. And that tells me that it's the exact opposite that's going to happen.
Okay. Well, yeah.
So I think as that relates to what we were talking about with El Salvador, so El Salvador gets the flip side of that. They will get tremendous inflation from the monetary printing because they don't have the release valve or the innovation or any of these other things that we've discussed that would, you know, prevent it. So I think this is, you know, potentially, I don't think it's going to play out the way maybe people think, but I think it is potentially enormous, not necessarily for El Salvador, although depending on how they play it, it could be very helpful for them. But it does have enormous consequences from a legal standpoint worldwide because of the way that governments define money, which, you know, legal tender accepted or created by a foreign sovereign government, domestic or foreign. So once it is considered money, which it is as of today, it is officially legal tender. Okay. So somebody is going to file a lawsuit in the United States against the US government or the IRS, and they're going to say, sorry, you can't tax money. And they're going to say, well, it's not money, it's property. And they're going to say, well, here's the fucking code. And the code says that money is legal tender authorized by a foreign or domestic government.
More money, more money.
That's now the case. And so it's very, 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 very interesting. I don't think people are highly underestimating how big of a change that is if Bitcoin was considered money versus property under this tax regime. Suddenly, I mean, it's just a game changer. It's massive, absolutely, yeah, unequivocally, yeah, massive.
So what if, so do you think because El Salvador, right, previously, you know, utilizing the US dollar now says, nah, we're now BTC, right? We went from USD to BTC.
Well, no, hold on. That's not what happened. They continue to be on the US dollar. US dollar continues to be accepted for all goods and services and the cancellation of any debt, okay? That will continue to be the national currency. However, in addition to that, they will now...
I think they just will have a second national currency.
Exactly. It's just
the same way that, let's say, Canada has two national languages with, mm-hmm, French and English.
Okay.
So Panama is the best example because Panama's on the US dollar, right? Since 1914, when the United States took over from France to develop the Panama Canal, they built the Panama Canal. And part of that deal was that the Panama Canal must be operate on the US dollar system. Okay. So and it was owned by the United States until 1999, right? So all transit through the Panama Canal since 1914, it was on the US dollar, and that used to represent the majority of the economy of Panama. Today, I think it's something like 7% or 9%, although that might have significantly increased with COVID. And in the law, when the United States handed over the Panama Canal in 1999 to Panama, back to Panama, Jimmy Carter, part of that deal in the agreement is that in perpetuity they must operate on the US dollar. And so but it does allow for them to create coinage. They can actually create their own coinage, and so they have the bolivar in addition to the US dollar, the official currency of the country is the U.S. dollar. Everything is done in U.S. dollars. But you have bolivars, coinage, not paper notes, but only coinage, which are freely exchanged for dollars within Panama. And so it's basically the same thing. You'll have the local currency continues to be the dollar, but you can also operate on BTC, you know, interoperable with the U.S. dollar.
All right. Well, so have you seen anything that talks about the motivation for doing, like, so why they do it? Because they felt they needed independence from the dollar, because Bitcoin has become so popular and the adoption now, and you know, you've got big banks and, you know, individuals and, you know, consumers and everything else. So what is the motivation to say, hey, we want second currency, we want it to be Bitcoin?
Number one is innovation. It's just bring companies to El Salvador who will create jobs, create GDP growth, and create innovation. I mean, that's absolutely the primary driver. Mm-hmm. It's basically a Hail Mary. I mean, you know, they're
well. Actually, it's actually a no-brainer because he has nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so. Well, and it is a game changer. And, you know, so now that's like, you know, brave new world, right? And like you said, I mean, literally as of today, right, which will be 2 days prior by the time the show airs. But the, yeah. And then, so what do you think happens because of it, though? I mean, does that by itself? I mean, we haven't seen an enormous spike.
First and foremost, his plane goes down with unexplained engine failure. That's probably the first thing that's going to happen.
Hey, he already made the announcement, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the horse is out of the barn.
Yeah, but, don't underestimate the United States and their ability to launch a coup. Let's see. I think it's just pure speculation to even wonder what would happen next. Because, like I said, I think the biggest implication is that now that it is now considered sovereign money, that has massive legal implications in every jurisdiction around the world. Yeah. So I don't, you know, it's going to be interesting. We're going to see lawsuits. We're going to see, discussions and political moves and regulatory moves. And I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play out.
Yeah. Well,
I think the more important part is really that this just sets some sort of precedent, right? I mean, it's no accident that right after El Salvador did this move, you know, you have Paraguay tweeting about potentially doing it, you know, Brazil, Mexico, like a bunch of other countries in Latin
Panama.
America.
Even Panama.
Yeah, Panama. Yeah, exactly. So in other words,
it's but I would put the chances of Panama doing it, I would put them at zero. Because
it doesn't matter. At least there is obviously some sort of pent up demand. Like, in other words, it's kind of like when that guy who bought like two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoins. It's not like that was a significant delivery of value, but that's not the point. The point is that it's effectively a proof of concept that once this has happened, now other people effectively for them to do that, it's a lot lower of a risk. So effectively it's almost like the pendulum has swung that way to allow for governments to do that. And, you know, later on, you might have like effectively governments start hoarding Bitcoin, you know, just like create a central bank, have a bunch of Bitcoin. And what's interesting is that if we assume that this plays out, let's say Bitcoin's growth in value in US dollar terms plays out over the next decade, the same way that it played out over the past decade, some of these countries, like somebody like El Salvador, can come up to be one of the richest countries in the world. It's kind of similar to actually how UAE came about, right? Effectively, it was just a barren desert and there was nothing there. But due to oil, they ended up having a ton of investment capital that then they completely transformed themselves. And now is maybe, you know, the most advanced definitely top three most advanced economies in the Middle East. So yeah. Some of these kind. That's why somebody like El Salvador, I mean, I can literally see it playing out like that in a decade from now. And it doesn't really take much of a risk for them to really do it. I mean, I don't think it's really, the downsides to me seem small because they can even downplay to the extent that this is actually practical in case they get some sort of pushback from the U.S.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, so I think it's super interesting now. So some of these other countries that decide to do something similar, do they decide, do they go with Bitcoin? Does somebody try to, you know, does somebody pick Dogecoin?
Nah, no, nobody's going with Dogecoin. I mean, maybe the Mars colony. But yeah. By the way, El Salvador announced today that they are putting $150 million of Bitcoin on their balance sheet. On the sovereign.
Makes sense. Yeah, the government needs to have some operating capital at minimum.
100%, 100%, and people are going to be able to pay taxes now in Bitcoin, and they're going to collect sales tax and all this stuff, and it'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, yeah.
People don't remember. People don't understand that Venezuela was like the fourth richest country in the world, like as of 1975. Like,
yeah.
1975, it was like the fourth richest country in the world. Today, it's like in the top 10 poorest, right?
Well, I mean, same story played out with Cuba, right? It used to be 100%. The place to go for Americans. You know, it was effectively more happening than Miami, like Havana was. So it's kind of like...
And had one of the most sophisticated healthcare systems in the world, maybe even number one.
Yeah. And now, you know, like effectively it just shows you, I guess, the compounding effects of bad policy.
Yeah, but it goes both ways. And so,
yeah.
You know, good policy very quickly changes things, right? Particularly in a world of chaos that we have today. It's very, the game theory stuff of this is just mind-bending, right?
And also, I mean, you know, like effectively he's also following up with some sort of, I don't know if you guys know this, but he had, I think if you have 3 Bitcoins, and you're willing to invest it in the country, you get automatic residency status.
Yeah,
or automatic citizenship too. Even. I don't remember. But anyways, no, but the point is that...
Automatic residency with a path to citizenship. But yeah, instant.
Yeah,
instant.
So that's interesting.
And white gloves. Because
you have... White gloves. Especially because you have this crowd of people around the world. I think people don't even understand this. That are either pure nomads or almost pure nomads. And they're literally 99% of their wealth is cryptocurrency because they don't care about anything else. But at the same time, you know, since this is, I don't want to go like too philosophical, but let's say the world we're living in is the layer one of life. So in other words, you have to have citizenship or residency somewhere. It's not like online that, you know, you don't have to join a website if you don't want to, but so if you have to have it somewhere, you might as well join in the place that's the most friendly to you. And this is also, by the way, a general trend that I think is happening right now. Kind of like the bigger economies are squeezing their people and the smaller ones are stealing those people away from them.
Yes.
So it's going to be very interesting because, again, this is a very specific niche of people that is extremely mobile, extremely wealthy. And the main thing they care about is freedom and kind of, I guess, their own sovereignty. And you have a country that's now playing along. And, you know, even though it's typically one of the poorest countries in the world, the fact that they're playing along and effectively there is no requirement, you don't actually have to be there 24/7. It becomes a very interesting kind of, you know, I guess, game that you can play. You can become a resident of El Salvador with path for citizenship, like Andrew said, and, you know, and who knows how it will play out later. You know, like in other words, it's just very, very interesting new choice that comes up for people that are kind of, I guess, digital nomads.
Sure. Well, a couple of things. So, and I think you see some of this, like even the willingness of a lot of the crypto folks to sort of make this migration from the West Coast to, you know, Miami, right? And I think now that, you know, a lot of them are getting comfortable with the heat and the humidity in Miami, like, fuck it, just go further south now. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like it's just...
But to be fair, like, I lived in Latin America 10 years. El Salvador is a shithole. Like, natural, incredible beauty, but, like, the most dangerous gangs in Latin America, like, absolute Wild West, like, you know, oh, yo, check out how cheap this beach house is, front row on the ocean. Yeah, double that because you need a security detail. Yeah. Like,
well, and that's
but keep in mind that, you know, it doesn't really matter because you pay zero tax.
Yeah. Okay. Here, you know, none of this was on my radar until this happened. And as I'm, you know, reading through this stuff, and I think the president even put it in one of his tweets, but I didn't realize El Salvador has no property tax. That is, to me, like, that's like almost one of the most intriguing parts of this whole equation. It's like, wait a minute. not only is El Salvador the first country to do this, but the fact that El Salvador has no property tax is like an entire other level of this game theory that could play out that is quite interesting, because that has implications. Also, like, you know, it's almost like a whole other subject, whole other show. But like the fact that there's no property tax creates almost absolute – the ability to create absolute sovereignty. And so it's pretty interesting. If you can make an investment there, get residency that leads to citizenship, own a piece of land where you have actual real, you know, sort of first layer title to that land, that's pretty important. Those are big macro factors.
Yeah. And, you know, and talking about like the condition and the safety and everything too, I mean, you know, enough money ends up in there. Right. And, you know, the folks that we're talking about that, you know, make this kind of move and, you know, and I think it's, and more money comes into the country, right? Then those types of changes and improvements, like you could have these enclaves of like, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, some of that already. Right. And yeah, security detail, but you know, if money pumps in and value pumps into the economy.
And also, by the way, keep in mind that since El Salvador is actually a very tiny country, it doesn't take much. So it's not like a country the size of the U.S. saying, oh, we're going to provide these benefits, so come over. But even if, you know, if you have like 10 million people come over, it's just going to get swallowed up by just due to the sheer mass of the people that are already in. El Salvador is very small. You know, if you have a couple of million people coming over due to this, you know, at least, I mean, not necessarily physically, but at least virtually from the sense that you just become resident while being somewhere else, you know, that could be a huge game changer. That could swallow up literally their whole crime problem. And especially like, you know, think about it. Like, let's say you have a couple million people coming. They're all there, Bitcoin heavy. And then Bitcoin also goes up tenfold from here. This could become... it could become the quickest story of poorest country to richest country in the world that I think anybody has ever seen. Like literally in a decade from now, it could become top five richest countries and nobody's even noticing that this could happen right now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like that meme that shows that really futuristic, clean city. And they're like, this could be where we live now if, you know, and it's usually the way the meme works is if it's some like benign thing, you know what I mean? Where if it's like, oh, if like, you know, if we just stop doing this, or if we just move here, this is what it would look like, right? And in fact, Billy, throw the photo up. You know what I mean? So for the video, for the folks watching the video, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it is like that kind of thing where all of a sudden it becomes like Wakanda, you know, when you fly into the, you know, the fucking dome and it's all like, bam. And it's like the most futuristic community in the world, right? You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden it's like, you know, they got vibranium and Bitcoin is vibranium in this metaphor, right? And it's like, it literally could transform, you know, this very poor country into, you know, kind of an oasis, right? I mean, and I think that, you know, and sure, it's not going to happen like that, but it could happen over time. And like you said, quicker than people realize, like you throw a whole, of a sudden talking millions, you know, and tens of millions.
I don't know about tens of millions of people or millions of people or even hundreds. I don't even think you're going to have, if you have thousands of people, I'll be surprised. But yeah, at least in the next couple of years. But the real shit is like, you already have CZ from Binance and Justin Tron are already saying like, oh, we're setting up shop. Like, oh, we're in. We want citizenship. We want residency. We're going to set up offices. Let's go. Right. And it's like, all right, you take two billionaires, they call it five, right? You have five billionaires and there's a lot of billionaires in the crypto space. You get five billionaires that say, oh, I'm coming to set up an office and move my residency to El Salvador. Like, they can move the entire GDP of the country by 25%.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't take a lot. You don't need millions of people. You just need, you know. No. And the people that you're talking about that are making this move are going to be people that have real wealth, like real, real wealth. So,
yeah. You know. In the same way that sort of some of the early people thought they could turn Puerto Rico into, like, you know, the first crypto country, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, I don't know. You know, I guess they sort of naively forgot that the U.S. controlled it or owned it, right? But I think it's super actually possible. Like, I don't want to get too far out left field because there's a long way between here and there. Like, there's a bunch of other sort of contrarian ideas that I have about how this could play out, which aren't good. One of them being that basically El Salvador becomes a honeypot for, you know, the U.S. to really make a fucking serious attack on Bitcoin.
But that will only happen if El Salvador remains the only one to do that, or with even interest to do that. Like the moment that you have all these other leaders,
that's actually not necessarily true. If all of the countries, let's say you get three countries that do it in the next 12, 18, 24 months, all of the ones that are even like voicing support for this are in Central America, except Paraguay, which is South America. And every single one of these countries is basically, they're completely subsidized by the United States, and they are really under, like, basically between the World Bank, the International Development Bank, and the United States, there's basically complete control of these countries. And so
But it's under the current setup. So in other words, what can happen is that, let's say they do all this work, all this investment comes in, they also store a lot of their own country's wealth in the form of Bitcoin. Suddenly Bitcoin, let's say it goes, does a 10X. Okay, suddenly, they're like, hey, you know, U.S. is saying, oh, you know what? We'll cut you off if you don't shut it down. You know, like, in other words, it's almost like the fact that everything moves so fast, it's almost like no matter what they do, no matter what happens, it's a win-win. Because let's say if nothing happens with Bitcoin, they can just call the whole thing off. If everything goes 10X, suddenly they say, hey, you know what? We actually don't even need the U.S.'s help. The U.S.'s help wouldn't be as much of a help that Bitcoin effectively did by them helping themselves. So that's why it's kind of like just due to the sheer, like, effectively, it's almost like you get free options on all these scenarios. And by the time they play out, it's going to be way faster than something like the US, some US intervention.
Well, and then what about if so let's say all these other countries start to adopt it, right? And the US says, you know what, fuck it. Like, we'll just adopt it as a secondary currency as well. I mean, is that like, you know,
I don't think that's in the cards anytime soon. But
and I'm with you, right? Because then that would be just complete abandonment of the dollar, and everything would be like, you know, abandonment.
I don't think that option is on the table.
But maybe they get more friendly. But maybe the U.S. gets more friendly about how they decide to tax it. They say, look, like, you know, so to keep people from completely taking off. Now, I know. What was the thing that, like, Trump, like, and I didn't see it. I heard about it. I guess he did somewhere, like, was it a video or like whatever, where he was talking about how he doesn't like Bitcoin.
He was on a news program, you know, we brought one of the talking head on Fox News, brought him on, and they were talking about Bitcoin, and he was shitting on Bitcoin. And he said, but it, you know, it's interesting because the way that the media, of course, interprets his comments was, you know, Trump's attacking Bitcoin. Trump thinks Bitcoin's a scam. Trump thinks Bitcoin should be regulated into oblivion. And actually what I heard is Trump thinks that Bitcoin is actually a legitimate currency and competitor to the United States dollar.
Yeah.
What I heard was Trump doesn't understand Bitcoin and says, yeah, like literally his quoted words were, I just feel like Bitcoin is a scam. That's what he said. I just feel like Bitcoin is a scam. To me, what that says is, I don't understand Bitcoin. Number go up technology feels like a Ponzi scheme. I am too stupid to actually dig into how this all works. I don't even use a laptop. And so
that's why I always, you know, when these people voice their opinions. I mean, I would never go to my grandmother and ask her to explain the FTP for me. Like, I mean, who cares what people actually think? If they're not in this, in that industry, it's not like he's even in tech to be able to voice his opinion. He's also fucking old. Like, I don't know if you guys ever dealt with old people in tech. They're not the ones who are explaining stuff to you. You need to explain stuff to them. So how would that even make any sense be relevant what he even thinks about that? You know, you can also ask him about all other tech, you know, like, oh, what about like Neuralink or whatever else? I mean,
it's a scam.
As anybody who's ever had to hook up a printer for an in-law, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, you know, you get it. Absolutely. I'm with it. And he's not really known to be the most intellectually curious dude to even, like you said, he's not, I don't even think he uses email.
He missed the last 25 years of technological innovation. I mean, the guy literally never adopted the computer. Like, So,
oh, yeah, that's funny shit. But all right. So with that, let's talk. So, you know, another thing that happened this week, interesting, I think, around crypto, you know, is this the gas company, you know, the paid the ransomware and then they were able to pull the ransomware back. Or I'm sorry. They used ransomware. They got the ransom. Then it looks like the, you know, the FBI or whoever was able to get the ransom back. Right. So my understanding is that took place because these folks, like, you know, left their, the key, you know, on the server. Right. So
yeah, it sounds like effectively they're just really bad hackers that hackers are in the crypto field, because it's just like, again, effectively they use the custodian for their crypto. And the
sort of.
But I mean, the mechanics of it turned out like that. Like, in other words, they didn't have the private key, somebody else had it. So at the end of the day, yes, the US can go to whoever has the private keys, and if they're in the US jurisdiction, and even if not US jurisdiction, because the US reach is very wide, they're obviously gonna be able to to get it from them. So, like, I mean, but the whole thing was hilarious to me because it was misinterpreted like Bitcoin was hacked. You know, it's kind of like, again, people who don't understand will say this, but it's not really what it means in terms of what happened.
So, all right, 2 points. I don't think that it's because people don't understand it. I think that it's intentionally, that narrative of Bitcoin was hacked is intentionally created in the media, not accidentally because people are stupid.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that it's actually intentionally driven, that narrative is driven that way. Second is, I actually suspect, I'll probably get killed for saying this. No, but I actually think that this, there's a reasonable probability that this is all a sham and that the actual hacker was the FBI. Like, that this was part of a larger operation and that they actually had the private keys, and, you know, that this whole, oh, we recovered the coins is all a farce. Quite honestly, if I had to take a wild fucking guess and I look at all of the possible scenarios under which this whole thing took place, the one in which some really smart hackers hacked a huge pipeline, negotiated with these people to get a $5 million ransom, and then left their private keys on a server, like, I that is like the lowest probability.
That's why it seems like quite unbelievable.
The lowest probability, the lowest probability outcome that I can imagine. I can think of a lot of situations other than that that have a higher probability of reality.
Well, and also, you know, keep in mind that effectively, you know, whether or not Bitcoin is hackable is effectively self-evident from the fact that, there are accounts with almost 1 million Bitcoins that are available for anybody who can hack it. You know, so literally there is almost like an outstanding reward for Bitcoin being hacked. So
it's the largest honeypot. It's the largest honeypot on the face of planet Earth today is in the Bitcoin network.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great point, but I guess what would be the point of the FBI being, you know, like, you know, to take the other side of your theory, right?
I can extrapolate on that, but I'm not going to do that today.
All right, fair enough. It reminds me of the Simpsons episode where Homer starts, you know, doing sort of like talking about conspiracy theories, and he says all this crazy shit, and it turns out one of them is actually true. So he gets kidnapped by, you know, this group of like shadowy people, and he's like, he's like, which one was it? You know, and they're like, it was your expose on the island of, you know, like whatever, like, you know, puppet masters and stuff. And, you know, and so I'm with it, man. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just interesting, but I think it all kind of goes into, and this all ties it together.
If you look at this big crackpot, if you look at this big crackdown that they just did, it was a global, it was like one of the largest like criminal takedowns ever. And, you know, the FBI set up this honeypot. They basically said, they found the manufacturer of these like super, you know, it was like a private network, highly encrypted communication device, like a phone, except that you're not connected to the telecommunications networks. It's an encrypted network that these devices can only speak to each other. And they found the manufacturer of that. Then they continued to market these things, manufacture them, sell them online. They were $2,000 a piece for these phones. It literally like went viral within the criminal underground. Every fucking super criminal in the world suddenly was using these devices, and the FBI could hear every single conversation that was being had, all the text messages, all the communications, unfiltered. These people were super like brazen because they thought, you know, they weren't even using like code words anymore or any type of cover up. It was just like, yo, this is super protected. And so they were just wiling out. And then, you know, they had this coordinated takedown. They arrested like 800 super criminals. They prevented something like 75, you know, executions, and like, you know, cocaine and, you know, but it's literally like from human trafficking to drugs to murder to everything you can imagine was caught up in this sweep. But the way they did it was they actually were the ones who they were communication network, like a telecom provider. And so I don't think that it's a stretch to think that they are going to these really unprecedented lengths. Magnets for whatever it is they're trying to attract. And that's what got me thinking about maybe El Salvador is actually a false flag. Maybe it's actually a honeypot being created. And particularly the colonial pipeline or whatever, that to me really smells like it's we didn't get the story. I can tell you that. Okay. We definitely don't know the real story.
I'm with you. And I think for me, look, and you know, without getting into some of the extra detail and all that kind of stuff, or even playing devil's advocate, I think, you know, it all applies to what we started this topic, you know, at the beginning of the show, which is, you know, all this FUD, you know, that seems to, and the way things get spun by the media and everything else, you know, around Bitcoin and crypto. In that, you know, you have a, you know, it's like, and it's like, you see it even with Fox News and CNN and all this kind of stuff. It's like, they're not just reporting to you what happened. They really, all their shows are all these pundits almost telling you how you should feel about what's happening. Right. And you know,
exactly.
You know, and I think that's what you see with a lot of this stuff, which is the narratives that get, you know, developed through these things that are happening. And, you know, and they're all, a lot of them are intended to throw shade and, you know, kind of and in a negative light, you know, for Bitcoin and crypto and everything else. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I think that's a lot of what we saw, but, you know, but at the same time, you know, if you saw what was happening over the course of the last week and, you know, the Bitcoin conference and everything else, I mean, you know, and then the El Salvador thing, if it is genuine and legit, which I believe it is, I, you know, I'll take the other side of that from you, Drew, but the, you know, and I think it's going to be.
No, I don't. I'm not saying I actually believe in that scenario. I'm just saying it's something that we should be conscious of.
Yeah, for sure.
Because so, it is a possibility.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, keep in mind that Bitcoin itself could be the most extreme honeypot of all time, right?
100%.
So nobody knows who Satoshi is. That could be the CIA or FBI or whatever. I mean, that would be crazy.
In fact, I would argue that it's probably like of the three most prominent, you know, let's say speculations, it's one of the most likely, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, like, but at that point, you know, I'm not even mad. I'm just impressed, you know, like how that.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, hat tip, you know, like, okay, well played.
Well, you know, I mean, that's its own whole rabbit hole.
I just hope they aren't up in Solana.
Yeah, well, speaking of Solana,
By the way, that's another way to think about it. That effectively, you know, a lot of people use Bitcoin as the security for crypto in general, but perhaps you need to diversify away from Bitcoin just due to that possibility.
And this is a great segue into something else that I want to talk about, because we saw at the Bitcoin conference, right? FTX, you know, named as the, you know, the sponsor, the name sponsor of American Airlines Arena, right, where the Miami Heat play basketball, which is a big deal, right? So now you're talking about a crypto company and exchange effectively now, you know, like on par with, you know, again, airlines and you know, some of the biggest companies and things in the world entering more mainstream, right? So now it's like, and you saw Bankman-Fried, right? That's dude. And, you know, in the picture, like, you know, ribbon cutting and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, just doing his thing in Miami, right? And it's like, Hell yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, so what's the relationship with Solana and FTX? Is Solana like, you know, sort of like FTX is like, you know, sort of, you know, what do I want to call it? Like tentpole kind of, because they're all related. It's sort of all part of the same sort of brain trust. What's the deal? And,
well,
you know, and then let's talk about Solana in general, because I'm a big fan and obviously that's a lot of what we're into. So go ahead.
So as far as I understand, I mean, effectively, they're two separate entities, but in the early stages of Solana, effectively, we're looking to partner with somebody to allow them, you're better off partnering, let's say, with some sort of exchange to allow for better distribution, okay, kind of marketing. And at the same time, they needed some more help building Solana and just kind of more investment. So then they approached SBF, which is the Bankman-Fried. Mm-hmm. Guy, and from what I understand, they were so impressed with the tech, they tried to kind of, you know, poke holes in it, and, you know, it just came out on top every time. So then as a result, he became a significant investor in Solana.
Okay.
Both the project itself, and also just from the perspective of the coins. I'm assuming he's probably the biggest holder, actually, of Solana. Okay. Even beyond more than the original founders. And as a result, also effectively, FTX, most of the coins that are on there, they're allowed to be withdrawn and deposited through the Solana ecosystem. Because again, Solana is also a competitor to, let's say, well, to some extent, to Ether. So in other words, Ethereum would be kind of an ecosystem of a crypto ecosystem that you were able to put on other coins on, other, you know, things like NFTs on. So Solana is working the same way, but it's just kind of like more dynamic and faster. And I mean, there are some disadvantages as well, but that's why I think SBF chose it. And that's why also I'm very confident in SBF himself. So in a way, I'm using him as almost like this outsourcing of, you know, the data of whether Solana is good or not.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, look, I mean, everything I've seen about dude is like, you know, he's obviously a genius, right? Or, you know, at least he plays one on TV. And,
for example, what people don't even know that he's, I talked to Andrew about this before. I don't think we figured out like whether or not he's the youngest or the richest person under 30 in the world or not. Because he's worth right now at least $10 billion. And
probably more.
That's the problem, because usually people, you know, look at, you know, like public stocks and whatever to figure it out. Here they have no chance to figure it out. Ask him and then use that data, I guess.
You don't have his wallet addresses, you don't have
a there is no way. And even then, I'm sure he's got like a ton of them, and I'm sure they're kind of like holding small balances and so on.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, I mean, to gain, you know, $10 billion before you're 30, you know, it's very impressive, obviously. And
all of it accumulated in basically under 3 years.
Yes. And I think, you know, like the crazier part about it is that I think he's just getting started. So like 100%. Literally, I believe he's going to be the richest person in the world, probably even surpass, I mean, Bezos and Musk, if I were to guess, because it's just, he's got like very wide runway, and he's taking care of this niche that's kind of very big. And effectively,
he's like 26, right?
29.
Okay, 29. Okay.
But nonetheless, I mean, you know, if you look at somebody like Bezos and Musk, I mean, they're, you know, they're decades older than him. And
I mean, Bezos just retired, right? Like,
Bezos year is just accelerating.
I hope not. I hope not, but he's going to fly to the moon. I mean, he's, you know, Bezos going into space, you know, his future is uncertain.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and I heard
you might want to sell some put options on your Amazon stock.
So one story I heard, and I don't know was this in the down at the Bitcoin conference? Like, he was literally in line at a club, and, you know, there